Such pretty music that was. Nora Schulman and Judy Lohman played the Arabesque No. 1 by Debussy.
And before that, we had pianist Marc-André Hamelin and Franz Liszt's Concert Etude No. 3, known as Un Sospiro. It's 9:31, 25 degrees downtown, 33 with the Humidex. Extreme heat alert issued by the city of Toronto. Temperatures going up to 33 with the Humidex. It'll be into the 40s, so take it easy today.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. And hot, steamy weather.
Hot, steamy weather indeed. That's what we're going through.
A lot of people enjoy it.
I do.
I know you do. I know you do. For me, I'm not. But would you like it if the days got longer and longer? And I'm not saying, like, you know, the summer equinox longer.
Right.
I'm talking days becoming weeks long.
I don't think I could handle that.
No,
too much work.
That is the setting of the debut novel of Karen Thompson Walker. It's called The Age of Miracles, published by Bond Street Books. And it tells the story of Julia, an 11-year-old girl, who is living on Earth as its rotation slows down and keeps slowing and keeps slowing. It's a remarkable novel, and Karen Thompson Walker joins us in the studio right now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you very much for coming in. This book really, really touched me on a number of levels. But the one thing that really stands out for me, this is an apocalyptic novel, but the apocalypse is so quiet. You know, when I first got the press release about this book and stuff, I thought, oh no, you know, the big booms and shebangs, but this is a very, very quiet book.
Yeah, you know, I was interested in writing about disaster in a little bit different way. I mean, I am sort of addicted to, you know, disaster movies and books, but the way that I could imagine writing a story would be in this slightly quieter way, and where the focus is really on the people and the way that their ordinary lives are changed by this news that the rotation is slowing down.
Now, I read an interview that you came up with the idea for the Earth's rotation slowing down after a huge earthquake a couple of years ago that actually shaved a couple of milliseconds off a day.
That's right, right. So then, although I didn't end up using the earthquake in my book, the cause is mysterious, but that is where I got the idea. Because when I heard that, I just found it really shocking. I just had no idea that the length of our days could change, you know, within our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately I started to kind of worry and wonder what would happen if a much larger shift ever took place.
Mm-hmm. What came first for you? Was it the disaster or this 11-year-old girl going through life's changes?
Right. You know, the first kernel was the disaster, and it came after I read that, you know, I read an article about the earthquake that caused the change in our days. But as soon as I sat down and tried to write sentences about this story, the first few sentences came out in the voice of a woman looking back in close detail on her childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so that voice sort of became Julia, the young girl at the center of the story. And so they really, from the beginning, were intertwined. And I was interested in trying to chart the consequences of the slowing on the earth and on the people's lives, but also the events in Julia's young life, you know, as she goes through sixth grade.
Now, I may be wrong in this, but I chose to take the story of the Age of Miracles as still pertaining to the very human changes that this Julia goes through, like in a grade six, like all the stuff that happens to girls at that age.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I tried to keep my head on both stories, you know, I really wanted it to be quite a bit about Julia and how, you know, this age, you know, she's 11, so that age where friendships can form really quickly but also fall away at alarming speeds. You know, she's kind of falling in love for the first time. She's starting to notice things that she didn't notice when she was younger, you know, including the fact that her parents have flaws. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, she and everyone else is noticing all the strange changes that the slowing is bringing on.
The other interesting thing about the slowing is that it divides, well, at least the population in the United States into two different camps.
Right.
People who are mandated, the government mandates that they're still going to keep the 24-hour day,
right,
regardless of what it is, or people who want to live on real time, circadian time.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So once the days get longer, then the clocks, the 24-hour clock, no longer corresponds with light and darkness. So the government, you know, in a way to as a way to try to contain the chaos, reimposes the 24-hour clock.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I and that just seemed realistic to me that we'd have to do that.
Yeah.
But as soon as I made that choice, it felt right and realistic that a certain percentage of the population would refuse to live by that artificial means, because that means that children are going to school in the dark, and people are trying to go to sleep when it's bright, sunny outside. So
sounds like us.
So it seemed right that there would be some people who would want something more organic, and those become known as the real timers.
Yeah. How much scientific research did you put into this? Because at each thing that happens strikes me as, wow, like I never would have thought that. I never would have done that, but it strikes true.
Oh, good. Well, I mean, it was very important to me that it seem real. Of course, it requires a certain leap, but I wanted it to feel real as you read it. So I did a certain amount of research as I went, and just sort of as questions came up, for me, I would try to find the answers. And then at the end, when I had a full draft, I consulted an astrophysicist and had him read it, which was kind of a frightening experience, because I was afraid. It was after I had actually sold the book. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah. And the reason I waited is because I didn't want to bother, you know, a real scientist doing important work with a piece of fiction that I had made up if it wasn't going to go anywhere. But he was a great reader and kind of a lover of fiction as well as an astrophysicist. So he for one thing, I was really relieved by his response, which was I was relieved by how many of the consequences I had written about he felt were based in real science. And then especially once you take this big leap that something has happened that we don't expect to happen. Mm-hmm. And then in a few places, he helped me fix a couple of things that I had that were not as realistic.
Mm.
So he was really a vital reader.
Unlike a lot of, I guess, speculative fiction or even, you know, calling it science fiction, you don't give the cause.
That's right.
You left it incredibly vague as to why the Earth stopped rotating.
Yeah, you know, it was important to me. And, you know, it turned out important to the astrophysicist. I'll mention in a minute. It was important to me to not explain it. And that's because I felt like if something happened, if tomorrow we woke up and something huge happened to the Earth that no scientist on Earth was expecting, it seemed realistic to me that it would take years for us to understand what has caused it. So it's not that there is no cause, it's just that the humans who are experiencing this can't, they have not, in the time frame of the book, they haven't figured it out. And the astrophysicist actually at one point said, you know, I was happy that you didn't explain it. He's like, as long as, because he couldn't think of a reason that he knows about that would cause this dramatic change.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved the idea of writing about something that we don't expect and that scientists wouldn't yet understand.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to have listeners walk away from this interview thinking, oh, what a depressing book. Because it isn't. Because I was telling you on the way into the studio, I mean, it is apocalyptic and it is like, oh. But that's a scientific term. But at the same time, it is an incredibly hopeful book. I mean, the fact that Julia is narrating this from an older age proves that humanity continues on for a little bit.
Right.
And just even that the final paragraph of the book, which I'm not going to tell people about, that just, it brought so many good emotions up to me when I was reading it.
Oh,
it remained incredibly hopeful.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I didn't want it to be depressing. And you know, for me, I think that telling the story of a young girl discovering, you know, just discovering a lot of the good and the bad in life, that sort of journey, I think helped for me. That helped keep the book sort of buoyant. And even though there are a lot of frightening things happening, it's still a story of a young girl growing up. And you're right, she. You know, she's made it to adulthood to tell the story. And, you know, the other thing that it's interesting that what you say about the ending, because through the process of writing the book, I started to realize that maybe one of the reasons that I'm drawn to end of the world stories and apocalyptic stories is the way, in this surprising way, they actually remind me of the value of all our normal, boring, ordinary lives. So, so seeing things change so radically in a book, for me, makes me, when I look up from the page, then just every normal thing like hot showers and enough food to eat and friendships begin to seem suddenly more extraordinary than I normally would think of them as. So,
You've sold this book to a bazillion countries.
Yeah, that's an exact figure.
Yeah, a bazillion. And I understand it's been optioned.
It has been, right, exactly.
How are you going to, what do you have a follow-up? You know, not a sequel, because I don't think you could ever write a sequel to this book, but I could be wrong. But, you know, I mean, how do you follow this up?
Yeah, I mean, it has been definitely a little surreal what's happened for this book. I'm not writing a sequel, but I'm working on a new book, which is exciting. I think when I was in school, I got a piece of advice from a writer, which was you should always try to think of your writing life and your publishing life as two separate things. And when he said that, I think he was trying to prepare us for the possible disappointment, which is often a part of the road to becoming an author. But I found that it's equally useful in good times, because I try to just keep my mind each morning when I sit down at my computer to work on my new book. I try to just keep my mind focused on the writing and try not to think about everything that's happened kind of outside of the writing of my book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you all the best on your further projects.
Thank you.
And I thank you very much for not only coming in today, but for writing this novel. It's extraordinary.
Oh, thank you so much.
I've been speaking with author Karen Thompson Walker, whose debut novel, The Age of Miracles, is out now, published by Bond Street Books, distributed by Doubleday Canada. Really, I mean, so far this year, this is my number one book of the year.
Wow,
run out and pick that up. Thank you.